Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat number 8. Tonight, the topic is recording on your computer. Yes, there's a lot of different ways to capture audio on your computer, and there's a lot of different reasons for doing so. So tonight we're going to talk about some different software that you can use to accomplish that. We're going to talk about that all-important volume settings in your Windows system, because until you understand that, think of it, if you will, as the pipe or the roadmap that says what you're going to be recording or what you're going to be playing back, what you want to hear through your speakers versus what you want muted. Talk about different software, but first we need to think about what things we want to record, because that will dictate which software is best for that purpose. We'll talk very basically about editing, and we'll talk about audio formats, because that is important depending on what you want to do with your audio. If you want to email it to someone, it can't be too large. If you want someone to stream it or listen to it on the internet, again, it can't be too large. It can't be a big WAV file. A lot of things along those lines. We'll take some questions. We'll talk about some external resources where you can upload larger files if you want to produce them and have other people listen to them. Things like SendSpace. Someone mentioned another one called SendBigFile.com, or there's YouSendIt.com. That's not particularly one of my faves. I think I'd have to vote for SendSpace. We'll talk a little bit about external sources like USB microphones or maybe sound cards, and just kind of give an overview. We'll try not to get too technical, but we're going to move pretty quickly, so don't worry if you miss something. You can always catch up on the archive. And I think the best part of this presentation, or a very integral part, is going to be the show notes afterward. Links to not only the different software applications, direct downloads, so you can try them for their 30-day demos and see which one's best for you, but also just some resource pages. The first thing is to decide, what do you want to do? Why do you want to record audio? Some people want to maybe do a podcast. And if that's something that you're interested in, then you want some software probably that's going to allow you the ability at the end of the day to do some editing. Some people just want to post voicemails. Maybe instead of just sending or typing an email, they will send an email message or attach a voice file to it. Or maybe you just want to record a special event with a portable device. We'll talk a little bit about different portable recorders out there. Maybe you want to go out somewhere live. A lot of people, you know, like to record fireworks or town hall meetings or just different events out in the field. Like, for example, what I did in January, recorded different interviews at ATIA. And next week, by the way, there will be no formal tech chat here next Thursday, because I will be at CSUN walking around and interviewing people with my personal voice recorder known as the Zoom H2. And then you can come back, connect that to your computer, transfer the files, and make them available to people who want to listen to that on the internet. Once you know what you want to do, then it's a question of how do we make that happen? And, of course, learning the nuances of our software. Now, we first at Serotech have a built-in voice recorder for voice messages that you can use for email purposes or for some of the various chat message forums where you can leave a voice message. Now, we've had to set a limit on that, which is 5 minutes. And there's also, you should get a 30-second notice that you're about to reach your 5-minute limit. I would caution people who are recording something that long, make sure it's someone who enjoys those kind of messages, because some people do, and they like the inflection of someone else's voice and like to hear the background. Others don't like that. Research shows that a lot of people become impatient even with a full 1-minute message on an answering machine. There certainly is a time and a place for it, but make sure that the people you're sending it to really want it, because some people don't want those attachments. And of course, some people now are so fearful of viruses that they don't even want to click on an attachment if they don't know what it is. So by all means, use voice communications. It's great for inflection and getting points across that you can't get when typing a message. But just be mindful that not everyone is interested in that content. Also, if you're going to send it via email, you have to be mindful of size limitations of the attachments. The largest message you'll be able to send will be based on the two providers, yours and the other one. So for example, if your provider says you can send up to a 10 megabyte attachment, but the person you're sending it to can only receive up to a 5 megabyte attachment, then anything over 5 megabytes is going to be rejected or bounced because it's too large. Now, which software should you use? That is certainly a personal preference. I mean, who's to say which is best? A lot of times, just like screen readers or anything else, it may be what we've learned first or what we've spent the most time, or what's intuitive to us may not be to someone else. I myself, and I know Mr. Mike Calvo, use an application called SoundForge. It used to be made by a company called Sonic Foundry. Now it has been bought by Sony. I think we're both using, I know I am anyway, using version 8.0. The latest version is 9.0, and that it will be directly linked from the serotalk.com show notes. Now, one of the big things with SoundForge, the reason a lot of people like it, is because, for one thing, the editing commands follow the Windows convention. So say, for example, I start recording and we talk for 5 minutes and then we actually start the show. I go to the very beginning of where the show and I hit Control Shift Home and hit Delete. It's the same command that you would use, you know, Microsoft Word or Outlook or anything else. So deleting to beginning, deleting to end, cut, copy, paste, all of those commands have the same hotkey conventions that comply with standard Windows. So that was one of the things that got me interested in it. Now, should you use a program just for that reason? Well, no. You got to look at what else it's going to do for you. But SoundForge has, under its Alt-P or Processes menu, it has a number of very useful features. Something called Normalize that will bring the audio to the same volume level. So if it varies throughout the recording, it normalizes it or gets it all to sound about the same. There's something called Auto Trim Crop that you can use to remove silences. So if there's pauses in it that you don't want, you can remove any gap, any element of silence that's greater than, say, 0.5 or 1/2 of a second. And that can trim a few minutes off of, say, a one-hour presentation and keep the flow and keep everything within that moving forward. There's an effects menu. So if you want reverb or you want to put a little delay in your channels, just a wealth of different things that you can do if you're going to be doing more editing in terms of production. For example, Mike Cowo has literally put food on the table for his family and done very professional voice production work, both commercials and infomercial audio for radio stations, some promos that stations used, you know, to play between songs. He's done some musical countdown shows of Central America, so he and many others have actually found and procured gainful employment through learning audio editing techniques. So whether you want to be that advanced or you want something simpler, we'll try to cover a little bit of everything. SoundForge can be kind of costly. I looked last night, it showed a price of $299, but I've seen it as low as $99. So, and maybe less, it depends on whether you get a standard or professional version if you need all those fine-tuned editing features. But I know one that a lot of blind and visually impaired folks are using is called Goldwave, and that is at goldwave.com, and we have a direct link for the latest version 5.25. A lot of people like this app. It does have some effects in it. It does have some noise reduction to get rid of hiss from your tapes or maybe noise from your vinyl LPs if you're trying to copy albums over to your computer to maybe put them on a CD or just have backups of them in MP3 format. So Goldwave's become pretty popular, much less expensive, maybe $35 or $40, and has certainly become a favorite of many visually impaired individuals and just a lot of folks in general. Another one that I like, again, a little more expensive, in the $200 range, and again, because I do podcasting and I do a lot of editing, where if you want to remove elements of a presentation, it makes it very simple. Someone says something you didn't want, they didn't mean to say, maybe you get some feedback, something happens, there's some distraction, the phone rings, something in your recording that you want to remove. You need to clear your throat or a sneeze or any number of different things can happen. I recently been playing with Studio Recorder. It's a program put out by APH, American Printing House, and is currently used for all of the talking book. All the new talking book recordings are done with this piece of software. It's fully accessible. It has a feature in it called scrubbing, where you can use the arrow keys and move through the audio as you're editing it and hear what you're going over, which is great for cueing it to the very beginning and end, and then hitting the left bracket to mark the beginning and the right bracket to mark the end of it, and hitting the delete key and simply removing those unwanted segments of audio. And again, SoundForge does it. It used to use the brackets. Now it uses I and O, I guess, for in and out marks. And then you hit the delete key, or you can first listen to it with the space bar and make sure that you did highlight exactly what you wanted. Those are some of the big ones. There is a free one if you don't want to spend any money and just kind of want to play around. There's a free program called Audacity, Audacity. I put up a link to what is the latest official release, 1.36. I think there is a beta of 1.37, but I thought maybe people don't want to start out with beta versions. And someone commented that as of 1.35, they've changed some of the hotkeys and some of the functionality of it. One thing I would suggest with whatever piece of software you do is start with a very small file. It's one of the mistakes I made is try to load a big one-hour file. Start with something small, maybe a minute, maybe nothing more than a song, and just play around with editing functions. Try different effects. Try reverb. Try normalizing, removing silence from the beginning or the end of it, and just playing with a small file, because you get large files, then it can take more time for your effects to take place. Now, another thing that a lot of people do is they simply want to record things through their computer off the internet. You know, there's a lot of audio now that only comes through your web browser. I know some people use this next piece of software to record maybe XM or Sirius radio, because one of the things it does, in addition to recording that audio from your computer, it can exclude or omit your speech synthesizer. So you get the audio and you're still able to do things on your computer and have your speech, but your speech is not actually recorded in the file that it creates. And this is a very popular program called Replay AV, as in audio video. And again, a lot of blind and visually impaired folks using that. It is accessible. It may be a little daunting at first. It has a lot of features and functionality. Can't be afraid to go in and tinker with and play around with, but it offers you a lot of capability. It has a built-in directory of radio stations and things, so you can go through and find a station you like in a particular city or a particular format or genre of type of music, and start recording those and bookmarking the ones that you like. It has a timer. You can set it up to begin recording and end recording at a certain time, so maybe there's talk shows or things that you want to capture and don't want to be there to babysit, and they're ready for you to come back to and listen to later, or download to your personal device and take it with you as you travel. So that's Replay AV. And those are some of the most widely used audio applications out there. Now, another thing then is your volume control settings. In Windows XP and Vista, you have volume controls for both your playback, meaning things that you're listening to and can hear through your speakers, and your recording, meaning what will actually be recorded. If you set it to line in, it's going to record from the line in jack. That's great for external devices. Maybe if you hook up a voice recorder, audio mixer, maybe you own a Mackie or some other device, you can actually go in and set it up to capture audio from that. Maybe plug in an external radio to record a show. Any number of things through your line input. One thing you cannot do through your line input is a turntable. You usually need some kind of what's called an audio preamplifier that you would use. So the line input's very important for that. I use it a lot. My recordings here go through the line input. I use a mixer and feed the microphone and other computers, the phone, and all devices. Short of that is the microphone, which is what you want selected if you are, say, doing these voice chats, wanting to send voice messages, or just basically get a voice recording. All you may want to select is your microphone as the input device for that purpose. But if you want to record things off the internet, maybe you want to record this voice chat as it's taking place, or maybe you want to record some other discussion going on or audio that you're listening to in the media player. Then you select, and the name will vary depending upon what kind of sound card you have, but it's usually either called What You Hear, which is common in the the Sound Blaster family, but also I think some of the Realtek cards. A lot of cards use the What You Hear, basically meaning anything that's coming through your speakers will be recorded, and that generally will include your speech synthesizer too. So if you don't want your speech to be recorded, then it's either an issue of having a secondary sound card for that purpose, or turning off your speech temporarily, or just make sure once you start recording that you don't do anything else with your computer and hope that nothing happens that starts speech to play through your speakers. And again, that's why a lot of people like the Replay AV program, because it gets that taken care of for you. But one of the important programs to learn, and of course you can go into your sounds and audio devices and find it there, and a lot of times it's in your task tray as well, but it's the volume control. And what it is, at least in Windows XP, and even earlier versions, heaven forbid someone should have something older than XP, SoundVol 32. It's SNDVOL 32. This is a very important thing to kind of get a grasp of, because it, again, it's your pipeline. It's your gateway to what you want to record, what you want to play, and what you want to have muted. What you may want to do if you're going to do a lot of this stuff is actually make shortcuts to /windows/sndvol32.exe. Maybe put that on your desktop and call it volume, or call it play or something, or put it in your start menu. Likewise, since usually you're messing more with the recording side as much as the playback, you can make another shortcut with a /r on the end, or hit start, run, and type sndvol32 /r. And I'm not going to get techie tonight, but that's an important thing to know, because sometimes you're out, you're on a new computer, and you want to get audio recorded, but you got to get those volume controls up in front of you so you can select the appropriate device to actually record. And you may want to turn down or turn off things or mute things that you don't want that could add noise. For example, your line in might add noise, or something more like your CD player. If you want to record what you hear, make sure that there's minimal noise in the background, and you might go mute the other things in there, like your CD player or any other devices. So it's just an issue of looking through there. Basically, each control has a something that'll say maybe 50%, which means it's the balance. So you set, make sure it's at 50% so that you're getting equal volume in both channels. Then kind of a master volume, and screen readers will read it differently. Some will read it 100 when it's turned up all the way. That's how it should work. And then there'll be, after that, a checkbox, which is unchecked, meaning you want it available to you, or you check it to mute it or make it unavailable to you so that it's quiet. And that, again, can reduce the noise and background if you turn off or mute things that you don't want at a given time. Again, you have playback and record. So if you're in there and you just basically hit Alt-PR, it'll come up and there's a drop-down. This is where it'll show if you have more than one sound card, you'll choose your sound card. You'll tab once and it'll say, you know, do you want playback or recording? So if you're in one and need the other, you know, if you're on the playback side, which by default, if you just run this SND VOL32 or open up your volume settings, you're on the playback side. So then you choose, okay, no, I don't want to playback. I want to see the recording side. And then you tab once, and there's a list of all of the items to choose from. And there are items you can check or uncheck. Basically, you want to check only the things that you want to control. In other words, if everything's checked, then when you tab through, you might have 8 or 9 different devices that you have to mute and set volumes for. But if all you want is what you hear, or your line in, or your microphone, or maybe your CD player, then you make sure only those items are checked. And then that way, when you click OK, you only have to set those few devices, and it can make your life a little easier. So I hope that didn't get too technical. It's something you have to play with. And I got a link to a page that explains it maybe a little bit better than I did. But very important to understand these volume controls, because they're the pinnacle of getting things from point A to point B. Now, there is a utility called Quick Mix that a lot of folks use, and what it does is it basically brings up your controls, and you set them the way you want, and you basically save it as a preference. For example, I have one for each of my 2 sound cards, and so when I just press that hotkey, it launches that and sets the volume controls for me. That's great if you run a screen reader, because what happens if your speech gets muted? Well, you can press this hotkey, and it'll automatically set your volume controls back to a certain default setting that you programmed, which means it could unmute it and give you your speech back. That can be a lifesaver. It can save you time, downtime that you might otherwise spend waiting for someone to come over to help you get your speech back. What if you have a laptop or a netbook? A lot of times, the built-in sound cards on laptops or netbooks, well, they may leave a little bit to be desired. Even an internal PC can as well, with the native ones that come with it, although they have improved quite a bit. Don't rule out getting an external sound card, something like the Creative Labs X-Fi or some. It doesn't have to be that one, but there's other cards as well. I like that particular one because it's got a big round volume control on the top of it, and if you push it down, it will mute or unmute the sound. So that's handy because sometimes your sound just gets muted, and all you need to do is press that and unmute it so that you can hear it and restore your computer to use again if you don't have vision. Quick Mix is a nice tool that lets you quickly get your volume settings back to a particular state that you want to capture a particular event. There's the issue. Some people like to use external USB devices. So again, here it depends on what you want to do. If you just want to do voice chat, yeah, you can run out to Radio Shack or go online and maybe find a $20 device that's going to meet your needs, and off you go. Just keep in mind that if you want to do things like podcasts or more professional recording, then you might want to think about spending a little bit more money and getting something that is used in the term as broadcast quality. Now, again, you can forego that, as some people do, and just take their voice recorders, go out in the field, and record an event and bring it back. Some people take the Victor Stream and do that. Others might use something like the Olympus DS50 or one of their other models, go out and record it, and then come back and either hook it up to their computer and physically transfer the file from the device to the computer, and then maybe do some post-editing on it, either normalizing it or making other changes to that file. If you want to record big files, you know, what do you do with them once you've made them? Generally, by default, devices record in what's called the WAV format. This is what your CDs are in. It's a pretty large file format, basically about 10 megabytes per minute. So that can eat up disk space very quickly, but that's if you want to master something that's broadcast quality. But generally, your devices, unless it's a specific MP3 recording software, will start in this WAV format. So that you want to go into the settings and choose the file format that you want your audio to save to. Well, the common one we all know and love is, of course, MP3. Now, a lot of MP3 distributed on the internet is at what you said is something called bitrate, which a lot of them are at 128K. Now, if you're doing voice recordings, then you can use something at a lower bitrate, like 64K or something like that. Saves on the bandwidth, So if you're paying for it, and a lot of people are going to download and listen to it, and you're making a slightly smaller file that still sounds good, but people are able to listen to it. Now, if people are going to be burning it onto a CD, then you want to be mindful of that and try to leave it as a stereo file instead of maybe trying to save space by making it mono. Also, if you're recording things for other people's CD listening, if you're not sure what kind of player they have, you might want to make sure when you save it or burn it to a CD that you choose a lower speed for that, something like 8x, meaning it only records it at 8 times faster than they can listen to it, so it takes you a little longer to record it or to burn it to that compact disc, but you're ensuring that it can be played on a wider variety of devices. So that's helpful to know if you're distributing something to a large group of people that you don't necessarily know, or someone maybe using an older or car CD player or an older Walkman is something to keep in mind. The final thing I just want to mention before I take questions, there's a number of pieces of software. Maybe all you want to do is convert. Maybe you have a lot of CDs and you want to convert them to MP3s. There are some different software for that purpose. And two of the common tools, there's one called CDEX or CDEX that a lot of people use. I believe it is free. And then there's one that I've been using called Easy CDA Extractor. Basically, what it lets you do is you set, okay, here's the input files, here's where I want them to save to, and here's what the bit rate and everything that I want them saved as. So that, again, is a great tool. If you have a lot of CDs, you can convert them to MP3 so that they're in a smaller format. Copy them then on a portable device, on a SD card or some kind of cards for your cell phone so that you can put some music on your phone and take it with you, maybe even make it a ringtone. All that cool stuff that can be done. But I'll just see what kind of questions those of you in this room have and what kind of things you're doing, because maybe that's the best way to direct the conversation. Take some questions and kind of let the rest of the presentation go where the questions and interests are. State your first name real quickly and then let up on the microphone, and then we'll call on you in turn and answer your questions as best we can.
Al.
Okay, Al, go with your question, sir.
All right. As far as I know, QuickMix only works in XP. Do you know if there is something analogous to QuickMix that works in Vista?
No, I don't. And Vista is very tough because it takes control and basically creates something for each device as it runs. In theory, it gives you greater control, and then you can set the individual volume for each device. But then that device has to be present. Some of that may have been done intentionally by Microsoft to try to work with entities that were afraid of their music being copied. And I think in some ways it has been made more complicated because it's harder to get direct sound paths to record things in Vista. It's not to say it can't be done, but it is harder to do. And a lot of people can't, say, record direct audio from the internet in Vista like they do for XP. And arguably another reason to stay with XP if you do a lot of audio work. And also in the QuickMix, some of the new cards it doesn't work with, even if you're in XP. For example, the ones in the netbooks now, these Realtek cards, where when you go into the volume settings, it's one card, but it sees it as two devices. It'll say like Realtek playback and Realtek recording. And QuickMix normally likes to see one card as a playback and record, so you will probably have problems trying to use it on a netbook. Netbooks are great devices and may be able to do what you want with audio, but then again may not, because they are a single core. One of the things they do not do very well is quickly convert to other formats. I don't have a lot of luck, say, for example, directly recording an MP3. I usually have to record in a WAV format first and then save it as an MP3. And as I know others have commented as well, it takes a lot longer. So netbooks are great devices, but may really not be what you want to do or use if you're doing a lot of extensive audio recording or editing or manipulation of something. If you just want to listen to audio or maybe record something off the internet, you could probably do that. But if you're going to do a lot of editing or switching from one format to another, that netbook, certainly if that's the only thing you have, it's what you have and you make the best of it. But it isn't or shouldn't be your first choice. Or don't be surprised if it kind of hiccups a little bit when you try to do a lot of audio editing with it. Now, there was another gentleman with a question.
Well, what can we say for music recording? Because in terms of multi-tracks and all that, is there any programs that specifically work with that? Because a lot of what I do, and I play all the instruments myself and everything, involves 8 or 9 tracks at the least.
Now, the new SoundForge 9 does surround sound, so you can do 5.1 if that's where you want to go with it. But a lot of people in that venue, and I didn't go there, but a lot of them are using tools like Cakewalk or Sonar, and generally then they have to have some kind of scripts or something to make all of that work. But those are the tools, at least on the Windows side, for multi-track editing. If you have a Macintosh, there's certainly something called Amadeus, something I'm playing with right now. Oh, there is another Windows app called N-Track. I don't know why it's not M for multi, but it's N as in Nancy. N-Track. That's one you might take a look at, and it's about $40. It's mostly accessible. I don't think every feature of it is, but that might be the most economical way for you. Need a good sound card, and unfortunately, a lot of people have or buy these very expensive Creative Labs cards, but they're really not the best cards for multi-track recording because they have something that's called latency, meaning the time when you hear something and the time it actually happens. And even some of my podcasts that I've done with Creative Labs, you can tell because sometimes there's a pop or there's some kind of awkward audio nuance that wasn't in the recording, but it introduced it into it after the fact or at the time that I was doing the editing. So if you're in Windows, I would take a look at N-Track as an economical way. If you have money to burn, certainly you can look at something like Sonar, DancingDots.com. That's, Bill, they work with that. So for the serious musicians, certainly something like that would be more along the lines of what you need.
As a little side note for the Vista users, you can do this in a run dialog box.
Mike Nichol has left the chat room.
SMDVOL -32, and will bring up your main mixer.
Do we have any other questions relating to audio recording or manipulation?
Ralph here.
Go ahead, Ralph.
Yes, you were talking about mixer, audio mixers. You said a brand, what was it called, Mackie? Is that what you? And I was also wondering, how many channels do you have on that mixer for audio?
Well, they make a variety of different boards. They have a 12-channel board. It's for about $300. I believe that's what Mary Ellen has, VLZ-1202. And I have a 14-channel that cost another $100, but mine has slider controls on it instead of the small round rotary pots, as they call them. So certainly there are some more economical options if people don't want to spend that much money. I like it because it is broadcast quality. And what they say, of course, in that context, when they say 12 or 14 channels, they're counting two channels or stereo as two. So say on mine, it's 14 channels. It is six mono sliders for simple devices like microphones, telephones, and things of that sort, which you can pair them up if you want and use two to make stereo. And then there's four of the sliders on mine that specifically allow for stereo. And again, if you don't have a stereo source or if the source is mono, you can unplug one of the jacks and, make it mono if you need to do that. Mackie's some very good stuff. This is, again, if you're going more for something professional, you want something to sound really good and polished and, you really want a good-sounding podcast or do a radio presentation or maybe making production commercials for companies. You're trying to sell to radio stations and other production houses and things of that sort. The Mackie's $300, $400. You're not going to get that quality out of any other brand. They're well done. They don't use those wall warts, as they call them, the little transformers that plug in the wall and add a lot of noise. They're very good signal-to-noise ratio. Could certainly spend a lot more or spend a lot less, but I think they're good mixers for someone who's really taking pride in their sound and wants something good to present. Anyone else?
Let me ask you one more question, and then I'll let you go. On the audio connectors, are they RCA or are they like quarter inch?
Generally on those mixers, you will find quarter inch and XLRs for your microphones. That's generally what they work. There may be like two pair of RCAs for like a recording, like patching in a tape deck or something. But generally they are a quarter inch, so you'll end up wanting or needing to buy some patch cords. If you're going to interface a computer, you'll want cables with two quarter inch males on one end and a eighth stereo or 3.5 stereo on the other end. Generally XLRs and quarter inch. Best way is just go and read about these different things and kind of decide what you want. One website that I like and a company that I bought from and I really like them is Sweetwater.com, just like it sounds, Sweetwater.com. And they're located in Fort Wayne, Indiana. They've got competitive prices and they give you a 30-day unconditional return policy. So it's a great way to, certainly don't want to take advantage of it and buy 10 different things just to return it. But it's a great way if you're not sure, you get a chance to play with it and you have a couple weeks to see if it's going to meet your needs. And if not, you send it back and you pay only for the shipping, the original shipping to send it to you. And otherwise you get refund. Very good company, very helpful, pretty good selection of items there. And I've never had a negative experience with that company. So that's one, if you're thinking about it or just want to talk to someone or, try something and, sometimes you're just not sure. You think it's going to meet your needs, but you never know until you get it in front of you and make sure that it's going to do what you want. Anyone else?
Jim.
Okay, go ahead, Jim.
Very elementary beginner questions. I have a cassette machine. I want to take something off of a tape onto a, let's say MP3 or whatever I have handy. How do I start? I have no mixers. I might have patch cords, but how would I go about this? My volume's on at least this computer is like 100%. And how do I match all of this stuff up? And how do I monitor it? How do I do anything with it?
Well, fortunately, with a cassette, you don't need a mixer. You just need, assuming it probably has two RCA jacks on it, a cassette deck. You get a connector with two RCAs on one end to plug into that cassette deck over to an eighth inch or 3.5 stereo that you plug into the line input of your sound card, assuming you have one. Now, if you have a laptop, you may not have one. So then you're either going to have to use an external card. But if you have a desktop, you plug it into your line input. And then you, as we mentioned, you go find your volume control settings or do the start and run an SND VOL32 /R and bring up your record side. Choose the line in. Check that box so that that is what will actually be recorded. And then you'll just have to experiment with the volume. You know, you'll just have to play around with it, set it at 100 and see if that's too loud. Maybe it'll be perfect, but if it's too loud, then you set it at 80 and 60. One of those is too low, then kind of set it somewhere in the middle or just kind of just start hitting up and down arrow in that field until you get. So usually you can do by ear, but some sound cards are tricky, so it depends on your sound card. And get that where you want it. Then again, it's an issue of then deciding what actual piece of software you want to use to record it. Now, there is something built into Windows, very basic, very rudimentary, but if all you want to do is just capture a WAV file, maybe you just want to go right to a CD, there is something built into Windows called Sound Recorder. Let you get a basic WAV file of it, and then you can either burn that to CD, or then if you want MP3s, and you still don't want to spend a lot of money, then you could either use something like CDEX that's free, and I believe the website is CDEX.com. I'll post a link to that. And then convert it to MP3 if that's what you want to do. Which piece of software are you talking about?
I don't have any yet. I'm just starting.
Okay, well, yes, all of those that I mentioned do let you save to MP3. Now, I think with something like Audacity, some of them you might have to download an additional piece of software, like what they call the lame MP3 encoders or decoders, and that's lame is after the guy, I think his name was Derek Lehman, L-A-M-E-N or something, and they call it the lame encoder. You might need something like that because by default, Windows only lets you save to like 56K MP3. And if you want CD quality, then you might want something a little higher. But what you do is you hit usually Alt FA or save as, and then it will let you, it'll show you what other formats you can save it. A lot of folks use GoldWave, and there was a tutorial that someone did that covered some of the basics there. I think his name was John Wilson. I believe he's over in the UK. I'll post a link to that as well. GoldWave is an economical option, or Audacity is free. I'm not real adept at Audacity. I haven't played with it that much, but I do know some folks that are using it. Yeah, if you want to, like if there's hiss in that tape that you want to remove, then you might look at something like GoldWave because it's going to give you, and you can try it for 30 days. So if you just have a very specific tasks to provide and don't think it's something you're going to do on an ongoing basis, you can run that and get those cassettes converted. And then if you like it, certainly buy it and support the program. They have made it more accessible of late. But yes, everything that we mentioned does let you save or convert waves to MP3. Anyone else?
Jim.
Thank you so much.
Very welcome. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, thank you very much. Just a quick question, first time doing this on the tech chat here. Just your opinion, what do you think about a external EQ with a decent studio microphone with going into an external EQ in and out into the PC? I'm just curious on your opinion.
Can be done, and I have done it. It's going to depend on your sound card. Some of the cheaper sound cards can't handle it, especially if you really try to pump up the bass or the high frequencies. So certainly listen to the end product before you make a whole long recording of a whole disc, only to find out that you know the highs are a little distorted or the bass is. Yeah, by all means. I kind of go the other way. I have two EQs coming out of my computer, goes to the EQs, and then into my amp. Just experiment first and make sure that it sounds right, because if you've ever played with any of the EQs that are built in the programs, you find that when you start boosting the bass and the highs, the sound cards don't always hold up. So yeah, there's certainly no reason you can't tailor the sound. I'm a big fan of equalization. As one of my bosses in radio used to say, flat is boring. So Yeah, by all means, especially your voice, man. You can make yourself sound like Barry White, or, you know, if you, like myself, have kind of annoying tones in the mid-frequencies, you can lower those and make yourself sound more professional. Some people also use compressor limiters, so noise gate, so that, for example, you know, that noise gate will prevent, say, their breathing and other things, or they can turn their head and cough, and it's just not even recorded because it's... the gate didn't pick it up, and then you go through and do the auto trim crop or something to remove all the silences out of it, and you've got a great recording that's free of background noise. So yeah, equalization, compressor, limiter, noise gate, why not? Make your audio sound the best it can.
One more quick comment. This might be off subject here, but on the Behringer external EQs.
Well, I think Behringer, I had one once and it failed on me, and I, from what I've read, they're kind of the lower end. Some better things you can buy that accomplish the same. There's a, I'm drawing a mental blank here. There's an economical, no-name version that's basically made by Mackie. And you can get like a 31 band equalizer, stereo, you know, 31 bands for each channel for like $129. I think that's a really good deal. I'm just drawing a blank on the name here. I know they sell it at Sweetwater.com. It depends how many bands you need to accomplish what you want. I would say at least 10, but I think if you really, really want to have that fine-tuning capability, certainly something like a 30-band equalizer, because that lets you get very specific about getting rid of hiss, or maybe if you have a recording that has a nasty 60-hertz hum, you can get rid of the hum without getting rid of a whole lot of bass that you would if you had something smaller like 10 bands.
Yeah, this Tom. That brand that you're drawing a blank on, it's Phonic. It's a moderate to high-end. Behringer also does make some low-end and high-end type gear. A lot of folks are going USB mixers. There's USBPro.com, another one called M-Audio, and a couple of others that are out there that use your USB and put phantom power to your mic, and you can put two or three... four different program sources.
Do you have a lot of experience with those, Tom? I just haven't messed with those. And I actually bought a FireWire. Had any experience with USB other than just some sound cards? So do you have any, you can comment on, you know, how robust they are? Are they pretty good as far as signal to noise or functionality? Can you comment on them?
I've got, I'm currently using an M-Audio, the M-Audio Mobile Pre. And it's basically a three-channel mixer, just real simple thing with a little built-in EQ. It's not bad. There's some higher ends. The USB Pro is one that's a little higher. There's another one, and I cannot think. I'm drawing a blank on it. A colleague of mine had it doing a music workshop, and it works primarily on the Mac, and it was a USB. But typically, they're getting better. If you want something real quick that you can hook up right away and give you a real good quality, that's the way to go. I'm using Samsung Ribbon mic, about a $250 mic with that. I'm not using it currently on this, but I'm just using my Logitech USB mic with my netbook.
If you're in a larger area, go to a music shop and play around with this stuff firsthand and get a feel for it. But a lot of people asked how we do our podcast. Many people have the Samsung, S-A-M-S-O-N, G-Track, which is a USB microphone, but it also has a line input in there, and it sells for $149, and it's also a sound card.
Terry here.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
Maybe we could do, I don't know this much about, you know, wireless mics and headsets and those kind of setups. That would be an interesting topic for the future.
Mike?
Yes, Tom.
I think the trick to using wireless is that you want to get a system that is dual diversity. So you have separate transmit and receive frequencies. You also want to make sure that you get one that uses higher frequencies rather than the typical, you know. And yes, you're going to spend several hundred dollars on a good mic. I use for some of the recording stuff that I do at my church and so forth, we use a Sennheiser, which you know, you're going to spend a pretty penny there. You're going to spend $500 or $600 for a good handheld by Sennheiser. And Nady and Shure and Lightspeed are four of the top that use good dual diversity transmitters and receivers and give a pretty good quality.
A lot of good stuff out there. If you want to go read it, Wikipedia, just kind of get up to speed on the different terminology out there. Certainly can ask individual questions. Send them to content@serotech.com. We'll do our best to answer those questions. Some of it, quite honestly, is just trial and error. You're going to find in some cases your sound card may not meet your needs, and you may want to buy a slightly better sound card, and you'll be much happier with the results. With that, we thank everyone. Again, we will not be here next week. I will be out in L.A. capturing interviews from CSUN 2009. A lot of cool stuff going on. And make sure to be listening beginning the 20th on SAMNET Radio. We will post all those interviews that I've gotten Thursday. We'll see how bandwidth is, if we can get many of our Friday posts, but maybe Saturday until I get home before some of those go up. Keep listening there, and then we will do some weekly podcasts, 4 Mondays in a row, with the highlights of it. Then at some point in April, make all of the interviews that we've done available for folks to listen to. Thank Mike Calvo and all the management at Cerotech for allowing me to do that. Great way to let people know all of the cool technologies that are out there. So again, until next week, just stay connected and stay directed.